Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance with extra benefits like personal accident cover.
But first, this morning, sitting opposite me now is a man who looks after the tiniest and most vulnerable members of our society. And having spent 35 years looking after the care of newborns in Ireland, he's this year's recipient of the Kathleen Lynn Medal, awarded by the Royal College of Physicians of Ireland for exceptional service on behalf of children, and consultant neonatologist Professor John Murphy. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Miriam.
Lovely that you're here. Listen, first of all, congratulations on your word and great award. Can I ask you, first of all, to explain to everyone the whole area of neonatology, which you describe as the human turnstile? Because it's not the most widely known speciality, is it, John?
No, it isn't, and it's a revenue speciality. What I really mean by the turnstile is that when a baby is in the womb, the oxygen and the nutrition and the warmth is all being provided by the mum, and that's great all the way through the pregnancy. But once the baby is born, it's got to be able to provide, babies are going to be provided the oxygen through the lungs and the nutrition through the stomach, and be able to keep themselves warm within reasons. And they're all the things that babies can do, and normal babies are do very relatively easily. The problem arises if they're born prematurely. They don't have the skill set. They don't have the tools to do this. And that's where they run into difficulties. And that's where the specialty steps in to try and provide these qualities to babies until they get to a stage that they can do it themselves.
Where did your interest in paediatrics and specifically, I suppose, neonatology, where did that stem from?
Well, quite honestly, it came when I was a teenager from watching television and seeing a show on television and watching a doctor on television looking at a child and making a diagnosis of meningitis and then treating that child. And I was very fascinated, but I said, I'd like to do something like that into the future. That's where my first real like a paediatrics began. So I said, I'll do that, I think, when I grow up.
And was it the death of John F. Kennedy's son? I think he was born 5.5 weeks early in 1963, which also led to increased research and investment in this area.
Yeah, it was a very small area up to that time, and it wasn't, and main thing, it was kind of a special care service. It wasn't an intensive care specialty. And at that time, Kennedy had a baby weighing over 2 kilograms, quite a big baby by modern standards, and that baby died from a lung disease called respiratory distress, which was the big killer of small babies. And they didn't have the technology to save the infant. And after that, then he directed the NIH, put funding into neonatal care, and the March of the Dimes, which is another organisation, started funding newborn care as well. And they set about objectively improving it. What they did was they began to concentrate the sick babies in certain hospitals. You can't do it all over the place. So they concentrated the care into certain hospitals. And they also then began to train specialised doctors and nurses to look after these infants. And then from that, the specialty developed from being, you know, a special care to an intensive care service. And that really was a key turning point in the late 60s, early 70s.
I've been lucky enough to see you at work, made a series years ago, on your unit in Holles Street. But these babies, a lot of them, they are tiny, John, aren't they? I mean,
yeah.
What's the smallest, really, baby that can survive these days?
Yeah, we go on weight. We also go on gestational age. We're now down to 23 weeks gestation. That'll be around about 600 grams, 550, 600 grams. I mean, pound of butt's about 450. So they really are very, very small indeed. So that's where we're at the moment. That's what we call the threshold of viability for us in Ireland, would be babies born in 23 weeks gestation.
Have you seen a lot of change in the decades you've been working in the area? The older babies, the younger babies who can now survive that mightn't when you first started off?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been quite an amazing change. I mean, I must confess, when I went into it, I was hoping for success. I was hoping for improvement. But I think the degree of improvement and success has far outweighed anything my expectations, quite honestly. Certainly, I can remember back a time when 90% of babies weighing a kilogram, that's about 2.5 pounds, died. Mm. And now 90% of babies of that weight survive. So do you see that immense change? In the 1970s, I mean, deaths in babies under the age of a month was about 13 per thousand. That's now down to 2 per thousand. That's an extra 11 babies going home to their families out of every 1,000 babies born. So it's been a massive improvement, yes.
And the fascinating thing is the way you create, you know, you replicate in a sense what goes on in the womb to try and make sure and deal with the sensory issues in these tiny babies. How do you do that?
Yeah, I think it became aware. I mean, at the beginning, we were concentrating on survival, I suppose, and using lots of equipment. And the American, one American describes as flexing the hardware, where we were really driven to, I suppose, just use equipment to make the baby survive. But then over time, we begin to rethink, and maybe we need to give the care in a much more humane way and a much more common sense way. And we began to realize that noise and light can be quite damaging the babies. So we began to turn down the lights in the unit, and then we turned down the noise as well. We don't allow hoovers in the unit. We don't allow radios in the unit. We have these quiet hours where there's little or no noise. This is all driving the idea that you want to provide intensive care in the specialised environment. We also, through the system staff, we learned that we nest babies. We don't allow them to just lie open on a table anymore. These nurses put special boundaries around the infant. So the baby nests into it. The baby's position should be flexed, because that's the position they're in the womb. They're in a flexed position. And also we try to make sure that their hands are in the midline, because they need that so they can self-console, so they can find their fingers to their face, as they do in the womb. So this is the concept of the individualized care that we try to provide to them in the modern world. We also recognize that some human touch is really important to them. There's a system called kangaroo care, which is skin to skin, and even very small babies can be gently taken out of their incubators, and then the parents can put them inside their shirt and have skin to skin contact. And that resettles babies down as well. It's very nice for the parents as well, I think, and it's that very good connectivity. And the human voice, the parent human voice, is good. So we encourage parents to talk to their infants as well. This is all about the new concept of providing intensive care.
And tell me about placing preterm babies in a plastic bag. I mean, it sounds counterintuitive, but
yeah, this came from what I call big data, because when we collect all the data for our preterm babies and we submit this to a system called in Vermont in America, an Irish American, Jerry Lucy, started this way back. And in the United States and across Europe and Australasia, all the neonatal units provide all the data of their babies under 1,500 grams, the small babies, to this big centre. And from it, they realised in the late 80s, early 90s, that one of the big problems worldwide is that babies are born and they're getting cold very rapidly in the first half an hour inside in the big, you know, labour ward or operating theatre. And it's a real problem. So they set about, what can we do about this? And somebody came up with the idea that a plastic bag, and I don't mean a special plastic bag, I mean, you know, like a large sandwich bag. Yeah. You just cut the ends off, and then at the moment of birth, you slip it in over the baby. I mean, not over the baby's head, but over the baby's trunk and limbs. And you don't have to dry the baby even, and you just wrap them in that. And it acts like a newborn sauna, and that really maintains the body temperature very, very effectively. So this is a technique that costs a few cents, and
it's
very life-saving. And we're doing quite a bit of work in Hull Street at the moment on that. One of our researchers, Emma Dunn's doing a lot of work on this. And the point about it that she makes is that not only is it very, very effective, but it costs very little to us and can be replicated in the third world as well, where hypothermia is a very big killer of tiny babies. So this could be easily replicated worldwide. So that's why it's been such an exciting but very simple development.
Incredible. Also, is it very difficult, because when a baby's tiny, even a baby's a little older, it's very hard for them to tell you they're in pain. So how do you know when a tiny preterm baby is in pain, or are there things you can look out for?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, first of all, the first thing you notice is that their heart, I mean, like anybody else, their heart rate goes up, like anybody who's anxious or in pain. And then their blood pressure goes up as well, and they look paler. They don't sweat like adults, so you don't get that appearance. And their breathing becomes irregular as well. And an experienced neonatal nurse who are very, very skilled people, they'll know since this baby's in pain. And they show facial changes, but there's brow bulging, but the brow becomes very obviously, and their face widens, and the creases and beside the nose becomes obvious. We can see these facial appearance, and just that baby's in pain. We need to do something about this. The most effective way is try and, you know, avoid the source of pain to the baby in the first place. But if necessary, then we give them analgesics, including morphine.
I mean, and the amazing thing is, I was asking you earlier before we went on air about masks, and you were saying that was something you were all really worried about, that these tiny babies, I suppose, even if they're being taken out to be fed, would the mask upset them? But you'd think not.
There is some reassuring data coming from some of the neuropsychologists that it seems to be eye contact is an important thing for babies. And that makes a lot of sense to us, I think, because we know that, just for many, many years, watching babies, as soon as they start to feed, they open their eyes and look at their mum. This is really their special time with their mother who's feeding them. They have this great eye contact with mother. And that works two ways. It builds a confidence in the baby, but also gives a lot of reassurance to mothers. And indeed, one of the first things we notice when babies are getting sick and unwell is the mother will often say, the baby is not right. And when you go back and ask her, what does she really mean by him not being right? And I've asked many mothers this question afterwards, in case of a baby might have had meningitis or something, and they'll say, well, the baby wasn't really looking at me properly. You know, I wasn't getting that constant eye contact. So that seems to be a very important source of communication that a baby has with their caregivers.
Because as you say, although they're tiny and they can't speak, babies have lots of ways of communicating with us, don't they?
Yeah, we all know that. I mean, the newborn baby is non-verbal, yet you jolly well know when they're happy with you or they're not so happy with you. They let you know in a very, very effective way, even though they're non-verbal. But the science had to be changed and really readapted to pick up the clues and the cues in the preterm baby. And that's where there's a lot of work goes into that area, and that's an area of development, and we've learned a lot from that about babies like and what they dislike, you know. And certainly they do not like loud noise, not white noise, and they certainly big lights up, you know, very noisy, busy units, they don't like that. They're soothed by the human voice, I think, and certainly by their mother's voice, and we like that. They are soothed by gentle skin to skin contact. Not the contact that you get when somebody's holding their arm to put a drip in. That gentle way that a mother would interact with her baby. And that's where we have that skin-to-skin system of, you know, kangaroo care, where the mum can take the baby out, even quite small babies, and put them inside their shirt and get that skin-to-skin contact. Because it's been shown that the baby's heart rate drops and they become much more settled from that. So we've learned those cues in the recent years.
I mean, listening to you talking about these little babies, I noticed recently David Attenborough, that wonderful man, was asked, you know, what was the most interesting creature or animal he'd ever observed. And he said, the human baby. Do you still find them after these years fascinating?
I do. I find them very, they are very fascinating. And as we learn more and more, I mean, it's rewarding because you can implement what your observations are. You see, you observe, and then you implement your findings and you see the improvements further downstream. And I remember there was a movie premiere of the movie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. Yeah. Richard Attenborough was over because he was the director of the movie. And it was in, I don't know, about the year 2000 or so. Anyway, and we went down because we had some charitable tickets that we went. And I met Richard. He was there anyway. I didn't know. He came up to me, asked me what I did. He was not a very tall man. He was looking up at me. He said, what do you do? And I explained what I did. And he said, how do you keep them warm? I said, we put them in an incubator. And I said, then we have a system underneath where we can warm water in a tray underneath. And that makes the incubator all steam up, and that can create the humidity like you might in a tropical forest type of thing, so the babies lose less heat. And he said, that's absolutely fascinating, he said. And he said, you know, I've got a brother, David. Do you ever hear of him? I said, yeah, well, I heard of him. And he said, be very interested in that. And anyway, he went off and I thought no more of it. And the following day, I was doing Wardour on Holler Street about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I got a call from the front hall, and the porter said, there's a Sir Richard Attenborough here. with his entourage, and he'd like to come up to see these babies. And he came up to the unit and he took notes for all that, and he said, I'm going to talk to my brother about that. And then he went to our coffee room and sat down for an hour and chatted. Very nice man, but that was the connectivity that he obviously had.
That's
with his brother.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I mean, I know some of the babies can have problems later in life if they're very, very tiny. How do you deal with that, and how many babies do end up with problems?
Well, we approached prematurity. It's been a stepwise process, and some we've got some very great gains. One in the early years, one of the unfortunate complications that babies did get was a brain hemorrhage from the immaturity of the blood vessels in the brain, called interventricular hemorrhage. And we found out when we were using steroids, and we'd given steroids to the mothers before birth if they took premature labour, and while that was very effective for their lung disease, we also found out that it was very effective at preventing the brain hemorrhage, and that was a great step forward. And then we used a medication called magnesium sulfate again, and that calms the brain down. And these have greatly reduced these kind of complications.
I've just been given a note to say there's an avalanche of texts about you. Oh, Miriam, we're so happy to hear Dr. Murphy this morning. He looked after our baby son in Unit 8 in Hall Street, and that baby is now 31 and living his best life. Thank you so much. You're a wonderful man. Noel, another, says, huge respect for Dr. Murphy, who, along with his team at Unit 8, were so good to us and our son Billy 9 years ago. Billy is now thriving, so thank you, John. Another says, Miriam, I was born 6 weeks premature in 1957. I wonder if any follow-up has been done on premature babies to see if they've any ongoing problems. I have some health issues and also find regulating my body temperature difficult. That's from Marguerite in Cork. Another says, my son was born at 27 weeks and just over 900 grams. The care he received in Hall Street was second to none from Dr. Murphy. He's 18 months now and shouting at me because he doesn't want to eat his porridge. I can't commend enough the incredible care given to preterm babies in this country. One last one, because I've no more time. My daughter was born weighing 640 grams 22 years ago. She's now in third year university. I remember Dr. Murphy well, such concern in his face, so caring. He saved my amazing daughter's life, and I will be forever indebted to him and all the staff in Hall Street. And that's from Alexia.
Thank you very much. That's very nice of him. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I love you. You're so modest. You are a very typical Cork man, but I've known you a long time and you're incredibly modest. One other thing I notice, you don't just look after tiny babies. You know, if a baby's born that has an issue, maybe a special need or a problem, I know from a close friend of mine how brilliant your advice has been in the past in those situations. Tell me about, you talk about minimise and maximise.
Yeah.
That's the advice you give these parents and they really believe it's brilliant advice.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the first one, I mean, if a child has a problem or a disability, then you deal with that. Obviously, it's a challenge and you have to deal with that, and you try to minimise the impact it has going to have in the child's life. But then you turn the coin around and look and see how you can maximise their qualities and their potentials, and you make the most of that. And that's how you get babies through in early childhood. You know, and that's the approach we use all the time. And I think we've got better at that approach. And I think it's really, really, it's important for parents to look at things in that way.
Do you bring your work home? I know your wife, Joan, is a doctor as well. But even reading those texts there, I can even feel the stress from 31 years ago that mum would have had about her baby. And thank God it turned out great. But do you switch off or do you sometimes bring it home?
I would bring it home sometimes, and I mean, it would affect you. But I do think it's all about setting the platform for you ones as well. I mean, I think in the workplace, no matter what you do in life, I do think that you need to be trained for what you do and have the sufficient experience. That does reduce stress, and also is to be able to control what you're expected to deliver. In other words, as a doctor, if you're going to have a complex case mix that you have to deal with, like neonatal intensive care, if you have the right staff and the right equipment and the right, you know, investigatory mechanisms and treatments available to you, then you can do your best and you'll feel you've done your best, and I think that is good. But I think they're quite distressing things. We have a system. We try to teach resilience in our doctors as well, and we try to teach them, like they can have a very busy night and they're very young people. And in the morning we discuss things with them in great detail. But we also try to make the point to them, listen, you know, if you weren't here last night in that very difficult situation, some other doctor would be in that place as well. So we try to teach them that resilience, which is important, I think, and that resilience is important as well in terms of for a doctor outside work. And what we try to do, we discuss things every morning so people don't go home with the things spinning around in their heads that, you know, it's been discussed and they can put it to one side. And I found that particularly helpful.
Finally, congrats on your award. Was it pleasing to get?
Yeah, it was very flattering to get get that award, and it's particularly nice to get it from one's own colleagues. I mean, you know, you can't pull the wool over the eyes of your colleagues, so certainly, you know, they know you so well. So I found that very pleasing. Yes, thank you.
Anyway, Professor John Murphy, as ever, it was a privilege for me to speak to you this morning. Keep up your brilliant work.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you.
Mind yourself. We'll take a break.